everyone, and welcome to the Human Design Podcast with me, your host, Emma Dunwoody. I'm a qualified master coach and human behavior specialist, as well as being a qualified human design coach. And I work with clients every single day to answer the big questions. Who am I? Why am I here? And what is my purpose? I also assist them to transition from the person they think they should be to the person they really are on the inside. I teach people how to actually live their design instead of just knowing it. And if this is something that you want to do too, well, stay tuned or reach out for private coaching or Human Design Unpacks, where I show you exactly how to live your design.
Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to share with you something that we've been working on behind the scenes for a little while now. We've created the Millions of Millionaires Project to support small businesses like mine to thrive as we move toward the new paradigm. This is going to be a time where there will be millions of us with businesses we love, supporting us to live the most abundant life. And from this place, serving the planet with our gifts, our superpowers, and the fulfillment of our purpose. With this sponsorship program, it is our intention to build millions of millionaires through experiencing, engaging with, and supporting like-minded entrepreneurs and business owners who share our values and vision by holding space for them to showcase their businesses, products, and services with you to ultimately assist you in your journey to becoming the most aligned version of you. I have worked really hard to build this amazing audience who are incredibly engaged. They're driven to heal, to learn, and to grow. And of course, you're all diehard human design fans. And I want to make sure that you're across all the brilliant services, tech, products, and individuals that are bringing this planet into the new paradigm. I would love to see millions of millionaires creating their abundant lives and paying it forward in my lifetime and, of course, for millennia to come. So if you have a product, service, or even event you'd like to share with this amazing audience, then please email Taylor, my rockstar operations manager, at support@emmadunwoody.com for all the details and data. Okay, without any further ado, let's jump into our first ever sponsor on the Millions of Millionaires Project. So I'm going to introduce you to Sarah Wilder and her incredible human design inspired aura type jewelry collection. I actually received mine a few weeks ago and I absolutely love it. I've had it on that the boys trying on the talisman ring that I've got, and it looks great on them as well. I think even my eldest is quite keen to get one. Now, this collection of Sarah's was created to inspire those who feel a deep resonance with human design but feel overwhelmed with all the information. And, you know, sometimes they don't really know where to start with their deconditioning and embodiment journey. These talismans act as a daily anchor or a portal to the various potential within us. Each one is designed with intention, infused with a story, and assigned themes to help focus your mind and help you to remember who you truly are and what it is you are wanting to manifest or cultivate more in your life. We all know that where focus goes, energy flows. If we are serious about embodying our truth and aligning with who we really are, then practical and symbolic tools like these talisman to wear on your body daily can be a great way to bypass the monkey mind and connect to your subconscious to create real, tangible change over time. The front of the design is a richly symbolic image that contains the energies of each aura type. This alone is a great tool for daily contemplation, connection, and self-divination. The back has the keywords that remind you of your strategy and your aura type, which many of us forget, especially in the beginning of our experiment. This is more than just jewelry. It is a self-divination and direction tool, a practical anchor for your daily rituals that help guide you back home to yourself. Each talisman comes with a meaning card you can place on your sacred space and connect with your daily devotional practices. They come in a ring or a pendulum form with three ring sizes, all adjustable to cover most finger sizes. They are all sterling silver, so it will last you a lifetime. If this sounds something that you want to get in on, then use the code HDPODCAST at the checkout for 15% off this collection. Obviously, we are going to put the link in the show notes. And I really just want to share with you, I am loving my ring. It really does give me this, Like it brings me back to the now. It brings me back to who I really am. It's really funny. You know, often when I put it on in the morning, it's sitting there next to my moisturizer and I can literally see on the inside, MG, wait to respond and inform. And it reminds me to slow down, to take a breath and remember that I'm in response. I don't need to have to force it. So if you want to check out the ring for you, and by the way, I have a medium to large sized ring. As I said, it fitted both of my boys and also fitted just on his pinky finger. Then all you got to do is go follow the link in the show notes, use the code HDPODCAST, and you're going to receive a 15% off this Aura type jewelry collection from Sarah Wilder. So go check it out. Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. It's Transits Day. I'm super excited. It means I get to talk to my beautiful friend, Jenny Crowther. Welcome, Jenny.
Hi, Emma.
I'm super excited. We're going to talk about April, huh? Obviously, we're going to review March, then talk about April and have a bit of a conversation about Jupiter and Neptune, maybe.
Oh, I mean, they're my favorites. Let's talk about them.
I love it. Awesome. Well, I'm going to let you drive. Do you want to review March 1st?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, and you're going to enjoy this, I think, Emma, I actually want to start with gratitude because it's your favorite thing. I really just want to acknowledge everyone who listens to this and then gives me feedback. And I'm sure you get feedback as well. I get very specific feedback and I love that. I have had a few emails or WhatsApp messages from closer friends and a couple of IG DMs talking about what we spoke about. And I think it was the last podcast where I broke down the dates for the limitations, the Gate 60, and this chat about housing and if your housing situation or your living situation is a big limitation in your life, and how there was just all that kind of rush of energy in that kind of Gate 60 affected by Mercury retrograde in January and then kind of pushed forward through in February, early March. And people emailing me going, oh my God, here are the dates of my experience. They almost exactly match up. And so I really just wanted to say thanks to everyone who listens and then gets in touch to say, yes, I'm also experiencing this.
Yeah.
Because it just gives me some kind of, I'm quite sciencey minded, as in I quite like the process of observe conditions and potentially draw inference from it. So, yeah, I just wanted to say thanks to everyone listening who reaches out and says, yes, I concur. This is helpful to give me context around what's happening in my life.
I love it. Totally agree. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for reaching out. Good. It's really good to actually have, like you say, those in real life results. You know, I'm such a pay attention to the results person. Totally concur. And I love it. I just love having the feedback. I love knowing that we are supporting other people with the work that we do because, you know, that's the whole purpose, right?
Yeah. And podcasting is a slightly strange medium because you put it out and you have no idea. You know, no idea who's listening and what impact it's having on them. So yeah, I really appreciate everyone that takes the time to reach out and give feedback like that.
Yeah. So thank you.
So starting with gratitude. March recap then. We're recording this mid-March because I'm going on retreat. So we have three of the sun gates to talk about. And it basically we're in right now at the time of recording in mid-March, the last throes of the solar plexus clear out. For me, I've had like a really big aha moment last week. So all through my life, I've woken up, not like every day, but sometimes woken up with this feeling of a really achy diaphragm area, like almost like I've been doing crunches all night, you know, that kind of like I've been to the gym and done lots of crunches, but of course I haven't because I don't. so but it's been like a pattern for as long as I can remember. I've been like thinking back and I'm like, I don't ever remember a time when I didn't experience this. It's been like early, early childhood. I remember sometimes I would wake up with these aches inside the middle of my body. But now, of course, I'm obsessed with the transits. So this happened on, what day was it? Let me look. The 8th. Yeah, the 8th of March, I woke up with a really achy diaphragm. And then I was like, huh, the sun just went into gate 22. Neptune just moved into gate 36. They're gates of the solar plexus. Maybe this is the solar plexus clear out. This is like in my body how it manifests. Whenever there's an activation of a transit in a solar plexus gate, not necessarily all of them, but one that for whatever reason my body has stored trauma, let's say, it's a big word, but you know, unprocessed emotional energy in that gate, in the theme of that gate, is this what it feels like in my body? I suspect it might be. Because that would make sense, right? Because it had seemed to have no pattern to like what I've eaten or like, I don't know, I just couldn't put it down to anything that I'd done with my body, but it just this very profound achy feeling around the diaphragm solar plexus area. And that stayed for 3 or 4 nights. Like, so every morning for 3 or 4 mornings, I would wake up and be like, oh, it's still there. Wow. In conjunction with that, oh, the dreams, man, the dreams. Like the last week and a half, wow. Every single night, it's like Hollywood in my head. But like,
wow, me too.
Yeah. And my mum too. Like every morning, I've been like, how are your dreams? And she's like, wild. I don't know what's going on. And I suspect
that. Like for mine, we've been so emotional too. Like, I mean, I dream every night with water. Like I'm a water being. But yeah, totally emotional. Totally resonate with that. Very vivid too.
Yes. Yeah. Way more than usual. I don't always remember my dreams, but I have remembered every single one of my dreams. And they've been, like, for me, violent, as in aggressive and angry. Small disagreements with people leading to me being absolutely, like, violently furious and getting more and more angry the more they don't listen to me.
Isn't that interesting? Because for mine, it's people getting pissed off at me. I think that's really fascinating.
I mean, I think mine is projector wounding. You know, nobody listens to a word I say and I'm really angry about it. Also, I'm open solar plexus, or sorry, undefined solar plexus. So conflict is really traumatic for me. And it's like all my conflict happens in my dreams, all the things I wish I could say, or all the times people have disregarded what I had to say, particularly because it's gate 22, that when the sun was in there and I have the gate 12, so that gate of social caution for me closes my mouth more than it opens it, which means I don't very often say what I feel or say what I want to say to people. And of course I have to be invited. So yeah, I feel like the solar plexus clear out for me has been at night much more than during like my waking hours. I've barely noticed it there, but I've really noticed it happening in the night.
Yeah, I find that so fascinating because if I think about, the last week or so, it's also been really emotional for me. Like I haven't been able to pin down how I feel, which is, you know, normal for a defined solar plexus, but I've been consciously aware of it. So I think that's something that's a little bit different as well. Like it's amplified in some way. I've been really aware of that over the last while.
Yeah, so we're almost done.
Yay.
We've got G Center gates coming up next week, so hopefully they're a little bit less.
Oh, I'm not concerned. I'm like curious. I'm super curious about the G Center. We did the G Center panel in HDX the other day, and again, so many freaking pennies dropped. You know, one specific thing for me is this feeling of being unsupported by the universe that I get. And we were talking about it, and it's like this G center thing, like this unable to be consistently connected to my higher self. So I'm really excited about the G center. Tell me more.
Well, just by the time this goes out, we'll have already been through it. I'm going on retreat next week. So this is equinox energy. This is,
of course,
we're going into 2546. So, spirit of the self, love of the body, determination. So it's, if you've got the 51, it's this kind of shamanic initiation kind of energy coming through. And so, yeah, I think anyone who's listening to this will have noticed this kind of need for, certainly for me, I really experienced this need for ritual, this need for processing in that way.
Yeah, I love it. I literally just saw this, someone I met in a crystal shop. She's doing a sound healing tomorrow night as we record this. And I'm like, and I was Googling retreats, all sort, like just this feeling. So I totally resonate. The need to just be in that healing, but also like that really loving, nurturing space. So
yeah, totally resonate. So when this goes out, it'd be, if you look back to around the time of the equinox, around the 20th, and see if you were inspired to do similar self-healing kind of thing. Yeah,
I love it. I love the tangibility. I love when it just shows up. I love it. All right.
I'm also just going to offer a brief perspective on, because, I mean, we can't talk about March necessarily without talking about what's happening in the wider world. You know, we have our personal experiences and then there is the collective experience going on around that, which, of course, it doesn't necessarily need to impact us in a big way. You know, I certainly live in like a little energy bubble where I'm very, very conscious about what comes in and what does not. But I like to look at things and imagine like my highest aspect of me when I'm looking at the world events. I try to access this part of me that's lived, that I've been here just thousands of times. So I really get this big perspective. I also like to do that perspective shift from a position of being the earth herself and actually try and hold myself in, as a bridge, which is, of course, what humans are designed to be, this physical earth body with this kind of cosmic consciousness. And look at this situation, and then I bring in the lens of the transits over the top of that. So I'm just going to offer up this viewpoint for people to consider. You know, I'm not asking anyone to believe me, but, you know, sometimes a radical shift in perspective can be helpful. So what if we're talking through the human design lens and we're talking through the kind of prophecy of 2027 and we're talking about this shift from the cross of planning into the cross of the sleeping phoenix and what that might look like? And is this what we're seeing in the world? And it's not, you know, this language, this human design language, cross of planning, sleeping phoenix, it's got lots of other languages. It's got this age of Aquarius in astrology. It's got the Kali Yuga at the end of the Kali Yuga in Hindu teaching. So most cultures have a prophecy about this, right? But what if what I see a lot of suffering, people suffering, is because they're looking at the structures that we've built to protect us and serve us, and getting very angry about the fact that they're no longer protecting or serving us. And it's causing them personally quite a lot of upset because they're like, you know, shaking their fists, like, how dare you? How dare you? But my thought, my question, I suppose, is what if it's not their fault? What if it's just their time has come? And then I was like, if an institution was a person, would we get angry at them for getting old and dying or getting sick? Would we get angry with them? No, we wouldn't, because it's the natural order of things. And that's just what happens. You know, everything has its time. And so my observation of our institutions is that they're profoundly sick and they're dying. And they can't really, if you look at it through that lens, be blamed for that, because the energy that was supporting their peak, if you like, their prime, has dropped off or is dropping off. And the sickness that they're dying of, in my eyes, is they're too afraid and they're too greedy, and they're only greedy because they're afraid, and it's a survival thing, you know. So just if people are really feeling worked up about these, you know, these big, and I'm not saying that isn't having a big impact on people's lives, of course it is, but just these institutions were actually built in love. You know, when I look at something like, for example, the National Health Service in the UK, this is our free health service. It was designed out of love because it wanted everyone to have access to free healthcare. Now, it's got so big and so corporate and so unwieldy and so tied into, you know, it's one little fixed way of doing things that it's struggling. But it's the same with any big institution. It gets to a point where it basically, and this is a weird analogy, it chokes itself, you know, because it ties itself up with red tape and fear of, I mean, particularly like company profits, shareholder opinion, the insurance situation. Like there's all of these kind of fear-based decisions that are being made that are not necessarily heart-led. This is what my observation of what's happening. These big institutions that were originally built around love and around a heart-based decision are now making decisions from the head or fear, and we are moving out of that energy. So
yeah,
if we use that as a mirror for our inner world, then I'm sure we can all see, yeah, there are times when I make decisions from my head based on fear of legal or financial consequences, not from my heart, because it's something that I want to do. It's very difficult to move fearlessly through the world from the heart. That's where we're moving towards, I believe. But it just gives me a little bit of like, I can understand this if I look through this lens. I look at what's happening and I'm like, I don't necessarily like it, but I can see where they're tying themselves in knots.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's beautifully put. I think that's really beautifully put. And I absolutely concur. One of the things for me is that if we think about this cross of planning that we're moving out of, we've talked a lot about, or we talk a lot about how it's very tribal, you know, and one of the shadow sides of the tribal circuitry is giving up our identity for the sake of the tribe. And I kind of feel that that's a lot of what's going on, is that these things have been created, like you say, from the heart, or at least with good intention. And then over time, that intention and identity has been given up for the sake of whatever that might be, the tribal energy. And I think that you're spot on. I think one of the things we need to do is always take a step back and not take it personally and just get super curious. We had a great mini conversation about a week or so ago, where here where I live in Australia, we've just had like these floods that are the worst in forever. There's thousands of conspiracy theories flying back and forth about why they happened. But one of the really important things that stood out from for me is that in the devastation, what didn't happen was the old structure. So the old structure didn't happen. So the SES didn't turn up, the government didn't turn up. Even our Prime Minister didn't send help, and our entire region was left to fend for themselves. With literally people experiencing dead bodies floating down their streets, losing their homes, people like awful stories that I heard. But what came out of it was this extended community that I feel very grateful to be a part of. You know, the first nudge I had or experience that I had that something different was happening was that I noticed when I went into my town, and my town wasn't like it was hit, but nowhere near as badly as some of the towns around us. And the first thing I noticed was no one was pointing the finger at anyone. They were like, how can I help? What can I do? And although this time there has been a ton of finger pointing by this stage, what actually happened was there was no one running the show. There was no one leading. That old structure and hierarchy just did not exist. So what happened? Well, all of these communities came together. People who were, inverted commas, as they talked about themselves on social media, just people, took the reins. They organized their little bit, someone else organized their little bit, and everyone came together. And what was crazy is that there were so many resources between people helping out, money donated, things donated, that it was almost like they had too much in a very short period of time. And of course they didn't have too much, and there's still people recovering, and it's not all perfect and hunky-dory now, but it's still a journey. But I really noticed, and I know that even when I posted something on Instagram, Jenny, you noticed, it's like, that maybe this is an example of what we're moving towards. And I was like, exactly. We're moving towards a time where we are, inverted commas, just people, but the power of when just people come together without the hierarchy, without needing a leader, that can be very powerful too. And we are moving towards a time where this is going to happen, and having these opportunities to just step back and don't point the finger and don't blame, but get super curious, like, what can we learn from here? What can we obviously do better next time? But also just pay attention to these external clues, these themes that we're seeing, and how, you know, it's so interesting. Like, we're not doing this. No. It's that moment, like, You can plan your life and you can manifest your goals and you can be so thinking that you're in the control seat. But when you actually take a step back and watch these things play out, it's like, no one could freaking organize that. No one could have planned that. And we start to see how these big energies, this shift from one paradigm to the next paradigm, or next energy, next theme is happening. So we're either on the bus or we're not.
Yeah, it's a similar situation in Poland, where something like 1.2 million refugees arrived within the space of 2 or 3 weeks. And there's no big refugee camps because they're all in people's homes. Like, the Polish people just opened up their homes immediately and said, come and live with me. We'll take a family each. You know, it's like it is the power of the people dealing with, these major life events.
Isn't that beautiful? And it's so, yeah. Like, again, I just got goosebumps when you said, you know, they just took a family each. That's exactly what happened here. There was just a list in each town of the families that needed help, and you just went and picked a family and reached out and helped them. And I think that's such a beautiful evidence of how we're all evolving.
Yeah, I'm just going to make this rather beautiful and quite serious discussion, slightly trite and lighthearted.
Awesome.
How have you seen Encanto, the Disney film?
I haven't. I've listened to a couple of playlists on Spotify, and the music keeps turning up. Tell me more about it. Have you watched it?
I have, and so anything that gets this big, like the way that Frozen got massive, anything that gets this big is, for me, again, part of this, what we were just speaking about before we hit record, about the zeitgeist, about the cultural message that is popular. And I always feel like these animated films that the kids really get are doing that. They're an allegorical story. And anyone who hasn't seen Encanto, sorry, Emma, you're going to have to listen to me.
Well, I'm totally going to go watch it. And I also did watch the third Matrix as well, the third or the fourth Matrix, whatever one that you talked about last time. So thanks for the tips.
So there's a little bit spoiler alert, because I'm going to slightly reveal the plot line here, including the ending. But
okay. In
a nutshell, in Encanto, there's an elite family who use their special magical powers to support their community. Which is all very well, because it's good. It's not like they're using their magical powers to exploit their community. They're using them to support them. But if they have to, on a personal level, sacrifice part of their individuality to fit in and to please this kind but ultimately traumatized matriarchal figure, the grandmother. So there's all these magical children and grandchildren who are like using their special powers for good, but they have to sacrifice part of themselves. You know, it all goes to hell in a handcart. They all lose their magical powers, and their magical house comes crumbling down, literally. And they've got nothing left. You know, their whole house, which is built on magic, falls down. It's literally just a pile of bricks. And the whole community that they have been the elite over for the whole, like, generations, the whole town that's come up around this elite family comes along, and bit by bit, every person in the town helps the magical family rebuild their house. And so they were reliant upon the goodwill of the people in the town. And then every person in that town got to have a hand in the heroism that the elite had been monopolizing, if you like, for, you know, we're the special ones, we're the magical ones, we can do everything you people down there, you don't have any magical powers. You can't do anything. And when they lose their magical powers, the whole town comes and rebuilds. So it just was, I just thought it was a really beautiful allegory of where we're at. Like, the big caretaking structures are coming down, but the whole, everyone's going to play a part in rebuilding. There's not going to, it's this hierarchy, heterarchy shift. There's not going to need to be, like you say, this big centralized power, this centralized directorship. It's all going to be on the ground, grassroots, whole communities mobilizing around. So I watched Encanto and I was like, oh, that's a bit of an allegory for the cross of planning to the cross of the sleeping phoenix ship.
I'm loving it. I cannot wait to see it. And there's this real feeling, and I've got to say, like, you know, I've been, and I've said it before on the podcast, like, I can feel this new cross coming, like, I can feel this energy coming. And when we were going through this experience here with the flooding, the feeling of the community coming together just was, I don't know, like, it was new, it was different, and it felt really powerful. So bring it on. I'm excited.
Yeah. So I think that's all we're going to talk about for recapping and March time, and then we'll crack on and get into the good stuff, get into April.
Sounds good.
So April, I need to retouch on something that we spoke about at the end of March's Transits podcast, because the dates are March the 30th to April the 4th. So the sun in gate 21, the gate of the huntress biting through, and the earth in gate 48, the gate of depth or the well. So we did speak about this briefly. When we recorded last podcast, it was before Russia had invaded. So I'd kind of spoken about the 21 in terms of this theme of controls and power and use of power. And I also mentioned that Chiron is in gate 21 and is going to be there for a little while, on and off, over the next year or so. I mean, of course, you know, it's part of the conversation here in Europe, like, what do you think of what's going on in the, you know, this situation where there's been an invasion from one country to another? And of course, my view is not what the mainstream media feed me. my view is very much coming from my transits lens that I currently wear when I look at anything. And just, I think it's worth noting, so as when this podcast goes out, we'll just have gone into this energy of the 21 about power and use of force to gain control. And is that ever appropriate? Because Chiron, of course, is representing this wound to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
It's also representing our own feeling of powerlessness in the face of overwhelming forces, particularly related to other people. At a social level, a societal level, sorry, the question, I suppose, is it ever okay to use military force?
Mm.
Like, that's a question we as a society need to answer. Is it that ever okay? And I definitely not have an answer for that, because, you know, the situation, I have an answer? Yes, I personally think no, but I also appreciate that there's a lot of personal fear to be addressed before we actually get to that situation.
Yeah.
But there is then, of course, many personal ways that we can play this energy out. If we don't want conflict in the world, we have to make peace with every single part of ourselves, you know, and that's quite a big job.
Yeah.
Depending on how much we've not been at peace and have been at conflict with ourselves. One of the other aspects of, you know, the elite, this kind of mythical beast that runs our world, is that they're not honest. They lie, you know, they say whatever they want. But it's like, again, if people in power are just telling us what they think we want to hear or what they want us to believe, well, we look inside. Am I lying to myself?
Exactly.
Am I being radically self-honest? Am I lying to anyone in my life to try and manipulate them? The most interesting use of this, I'm noticing, so if I don't think at a kind of ethical level that it's ever okay to use force, coercion, or manipulation to get what I want, if I don't think that's okay, that's okay, I really have to look at, is there anywhere in my life where I am manipulating lying or coercing others to get what I want. And do you know where I notice it? This is like such an interesting observation. With my 2-year-old nephew, who sometimes doesn't want to stop playing with his cars and go to nursery or eat his breakfast, you know? But there are such subtle mechanisms at work from the beginning of our lives where our parents have an idea of where we're going and what we're doing and the timetable. And they have to, if they want to meet the timetable, use force, coercion, or manipulation or bribery, usually with food, to get us to do what they want us to do. Yeah. This is so early. Like, me and my brother took my nephew for a walk on Sunday up a hill. We wanted to walk to the monument that was at the top of the hill. He wanted to sit in the heather for about an hour, you know? And so it's like, that is so deep in our conditioning.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's a, like, when I looked at this, I was all like on my high and mighty horse, like, oh, I never use force or coercion or manipulation. I was like, actually, I kind of sometimes have to pick him up and put his trousers on him. Like, if I want to get him out the door, I have to use physical force.
Yeah.
As in.
And this is the biggest challenge that we have, is that we actually live in a world where that happens all the time. You know, like, I have this biggest, this is one of my biggest challenges as a parent. Where does my responsibility lie? Like, how do I be the best parent I can be? Because, you know, I am a parent that lets my kids learn their lessons firsthand, but I also run a business from home. So I, at times, have to get them to do what I want them to do. And one of them doesn't want to ever do what you want him to do. So I totally agree. And, you know, if I think about this bigger picture, and the powers that be, like, I literally had a conversation with my team. We were talking about everything that's going on, and we were just literally sat there in confusion. We're just like, I don't know what's really happening. I have no idea. I don't know who to believe. I don't know what to, I mean, we don't listen to mainstream media. And, you know, we felt like we had so many options to discover with the whole COVID thing. Whereas this whole war thing, I don't know. I do not know. Yeah. So I think that poses a really good question. You know, we are in this time where we have been taught to control and manipulate, and it's so deep within our DNA, and, you know, we're so unconscious to it, because in so many cases we're like, it's for the greater good. It's for the greater good. But is it?
Yeah.
You know, and this is where we're at, where I'm at as well. Like, what the fuck is the greater good? Like, you know, like, I don't know. I do not have any answers for this, but I totally feel what you're saying.
I mean, I've asked myself this question countless times over the years. Does the end ever justify the means if the means were not equally good? You know, if you've got a good, very good end, does the mean, if you had to use non-good means to get to that end, is it actually good or not? It's a very, very interesting question.
It's a fascinating question. It's funny that we're even having this conversation, isn't it? Because Justin and I had this conversation. He's reading a series of books. It's kind of like about these people who they live their lives, and their first version is like they're fucked up in some way. Either they've been a really bad person or they've had a really bad experience. And then they get to go back over it. And one of the guys, he actually decides that when he goes back into his next life to learn the lessons, he's like, I want to make the world better. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and kill all the murderers, pedophiles, like all this stuff. And we started having this conversation. I'm like, yeah, but killing is killing is killing, you know? And the more we had the conversation, the more we just got like in this big, like, oh my God, my brain hurts, you know? Yeah. So I totally like, it's not an easy black and white answer. It's just not.
No, it really isn't. It's a very interesting question to ask yourself. And again, it requires a lot of radical self honesty, because when we look at these very overt expressions of use of power and force, and we say, how could they do that to other beings? we have to look at all the microaggressions that we have perpetuated in our own, in like countless thousands of microaggressions internally, not even me to anyone else or anyone else to me, just me to me.
Yeah.
The number of times I've looked in the mirror and microaggressed myself, I can't tell you. Mm-hmm. So this is where the work is. It's these massive external expressions of it will only stop expressing when humanity as a whole has stopped doing it internally.
I could not agree more. You know, my entire journey from healing myself to training and to creating a business, all I am doing is teaching people to love themselves. That's it, because there's nothing else mm-hmm. that matters mm-hmm. because our internal reality is creating our external reality.
Yep.
There is nothing more important than learning to love and accept ourselves.
Yep.
And I think this is one of the things that is really challenging, is because we're conditioned to pay attention to our external, not our internal. You know, mm-hmm. even through COVID, one of the things that I was constantly focused on, like I was checking in on my own, in my body. I was checking in my own body mm-hmm. For the direction that was right for me, and mm-hmm. and, you know, asking my family members. So that I could navigate, you know, like I felt like I had a good, not thermometer, but that'll do. Whereas
barometer.
Barometer, thank you. But again, now what's going on in the world? I'm like you. I'm like, nah, no one should ever be, no one should ever harm anyone else. You know, I don't stand on ants. Like I can't kill a freaking insect. But as you said, like if I wake up and look haggard, I'm the first to criticize myself in the mirror, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, one of the things that I'm a classic for is if I wake up and I think like, oh, I can't be bothered, or any thought that isn't awesome, let's go. If I go unconscious, I'll start beating myself up for it, you know, like easy tiger, it's just a thought, it doesn't matter, let it go. So, yeah, I think that the biggest journey we all have is love and acceptance. And again, it's through the process of whatever's going on in the world. Are we going to put our attention on what we believe other people should be doing and how they should be behaving? Because that's what we often do, as opposed to checking in on us. Like, well, who am I and who do I want to be and how do I want to impact the situation? And that in itself is, like you say, it's a challenge, because you have to be really freaking honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm. There's the capacity for the mind's need to control and the mind's need to judge and slightly aggress is extraordinary. And there's an interesting, like anyone who's ever tried to do breathwork practice, invitational breath, as I call it, or watching the breath without letting the mind control it in any way or judge it in any way will show you. It will show you how easy it is for your mind not to take control and not to judge. If you just try and watch your breath without in any way changing or influencing your breath, you'll soon see your mind's capacity for leaving things alone or not.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree.
So I just wanted to come back to it because I think it's a big subject, and I just had all these like deeper layers of observation. The more I thought about control and force and coercion, I was like, this is very, very deep, very deep in our conditioning. So
yeah,
just giving everyone this invitation to try and be a little bit less nasty to yourself. And I'm going to put like baby steps, because we've got a lot, like, don't beat yourself up for beating yourself up is what I'm saying. Like, it's just be as gentle and gentle and gentle and gentle with yourself as you possibly can.
Love it.
Which is an interesting segue into the next week, April 5th to the 10th. when we get the sun in gate 51 and the earth in gate 57, the gate of the gentle. So gate 51 is the gate of shock or the arousing. It's an interesting
57. But, woof.
Well, you know, they're my everything. They're my personality sun, my personality earth. They're my nodes on both sides. I've got my moon in 57. Like, I've got so much of this energy in my chart. And in their immature expression, they're pretty ugly, I'll be honest, because 51 is pretty competitive. And, you know, it kind of prides itself on how mean it is. Like my observation of it in my own self. I mean, Ra's birthday was on the 9th of April. And so these, of course, make up his part of his cross. I see him as a manifestor type with the 51 in his personality sun, just wanting to be as shocking as possible to have the biggest impact. You know, I mean, that's basically what you hear when you listen to him speak. And of course, people wanted that shock. Actually, human design is pretty shocking when you first come to it.
Well, sorry to jump in, but I also want to add, like, one of the things that I think people overlook as well is, like, Ra does share that he came out going, oh, look, you can love yourself. And no one gave a shit. Like, everyone wanted to talk about what was wrong with them, how they were broken, what needed fixing. So I believe that he probably did really embody the shadow of the 51, but potentially that's actually what needed for human design to break through and have a big enough impact.
Yeah, I mean, I get that a lot, actually. Maybe you do too in one-to-ones with people, where I'm like trying to, you know, be soft and gentle and loving, because of course I have the 57, the gentle, quite strongly, and they're like, but what can I do to fix myself? I'm like, well, okay, we'll do that for a bit, shall we? And that's part of the journey. I think we have to indulge that part of our psyche or our conditioning that wants to be actively involved in the healing rather than allow the healing. So it's a subtle transition from one to the other. So with this activation for 6 days, we have another double trigram situation. So back in February, when we were talking about Valentine's Day, and we were talking about clinging fire and the abyss, so double water, double fire. This is another one of those double trigrams. So the 57 is double thunder. The 51 is double thunder. So the arousing, the shock, and what is thunder? Like, it's this. Don't know if anyone actually knows what thunder is, but I find this very interesting because I've spent a lot. I love thunder. It does something to my body. There's something profoundly transformative for when thunder and lightning is happening in my body. I will go outside and maybe put myself in some slightly dangerous situations because I love it so much. When lightning, so there's a charge in this cloud and a charge on the earth, and they get out of alignment. And the lightning is this electrical charge through the plasma of air to the earth to bring the charge together, to create this harmonization of the charge, right? What then happens where the lightning was, there's a break in the air, there's a gap in the plasma, and the two sides of the air fall back into each other, and that creates the sound of thunder. That's the sound of air falling in on itself and meeting itself, which is just pretty astounding.
I love that. Oh my God, I love that. And I totally feel the same way. I love a thunderstorm. I don't know. Ever since I was tiny, like, I'm not afraid of them. I'm fascinated, like, totally resonate.
So that experience is kind of what the 51, I think, is like. It's like something falls away and some other parts of us collapse in on ourselves, and we get this profound, like, oh, something falls away from our life, you know? Like, I don't want to make light of this at all because it's very, very strong experience. But when somebody dies in your life, particularly if you were close to them, they, like the lightning leaves a gap in the air, that person leaves a gap in your life. And then the other sides of yourself fall in on themselves. And it's shocking, right? Anything that we were kind of, again, let's keep using this metaphor, leaning on, as in those sides of the air were leaning on that bit in the middle. When the lightning took it away, they collapsed a bit. So there's this mechanism that I think is a good metaphor. The 51, if you look at the original I Ching teachings or some interpretations of them, I've heard described as the powerful voice of heaven, where something happens unavoidably and it shakes things up and it triggers change, a potentially profound change. So 51 has this profound, unavoidable, very loud kind of reputation, right? Mm-hmm. And so just to highlight that, from April 5th to April 10th, we've got the sun in this very strong energy. Mm. It is grounded by the gate 57, the earth in gate 57, which is double wind. And the wind is not necessarily hurricane force. It is actually a very soft breeze. This is an energy that I'm learning. I really was much more identified with my 51 in the early part of my life. But because it's my nodes, they were my south nodes, the 51s. The 57 is my north node. I'm now past Uranus opposition, and I'm very much stepping into this 57 energy of gentleness, the tiniest little changes. I was always looking for the big initiation, right? I was always looking for the spiritual teacher to slap me around the face, not literally, but you know what I mean? Just like, yeah. Poof, profound. Like, I wanted my change to be shocking, yeah. And like lightning and thunder. But I'm now much more interested in the impact of 57. And so when you sit and watch the trees on a very still day, there is a tiny movement. They're never, ever actually completely still. There's always the effect of the tiniest breeze in the trees, just this shimmer. And this, for me, is the energy of the gentle wind, this constant energy of just nothing is ever static. Everything is in constant motion. I'm going to use the word agitation, because it is a slight agitation. And that feeling in our bodies is a slight, that almost constant agitation is this agitation to change. It's very subtle and very deep and very much a part of our everyday lived experience. But I mean, especially for me, because it's such a big energy in my chart, but it's like, we don't always need to have the thunder and the lightning and the big shot. We can just trust that there's always this tiny, soft little breeze in the background. I'm using this metaphorically now, that's always at work on us. Like, and there's never anything we need to do.
Yeah.
And there's no avoiding it, because the wind gets everywhere. And just allowing that gentleness to change us, rather than necessarily always needing it to be a big thunderclap, you know?
Yeah. I totally resonate with that. I think it's really, really powerful. The other thing I would add, like, as soon as I was listening, you know, talking about the 51, it always makes me think as well, like, it's such an important choice gate for me, you know, like it's always important that shock, that shocking energy can react the ego, the fear, so fast. So one of the really big things for me as well is whenever there is this energy, because when you were speaking, I was like, wow, jeepers, I wonder what's going to happen, you know, early in April. But to always remind myself and for those listening as well, like, it's always an invitation to step up out of fear and into spirit, always, always. So not letting yourself get focused, sucked into that fear state or the actual shock itself. Remember, it is an invitation. I loved what you said about the 57, because there is nothing permanent. And when you were speaking, I was like, yeah, you know, that really is. That is the energy of being human, almost, like actually letting those small changes. And when you were speaking before about that big impact, and I was even thinking about being an MG and a line five. And when we were talking about earlier, like forcing our healing, that's something that I know in the past, I was like, I've been on that, you know, trying to force myself to heal, to change, to shift. And just you talking about that metaphor of the 57, this inviting this energy in to just let it happen in those small incremental pieces, especially at a time that potentially the 51's playing out, I think that's beautiful.
And, I mean, you make a great point. Where is the 51? It's in the willpower / ego center. And what is it that gets the shock? The ego. Mm-hmm. It's never anything else. It's actually the construct of identity that we think we are, you know, this, that's what's getting a shock, actually. Yeah. So if we can allow, you know, if that's happening and we can allow a sense of peace around it, like, I mean, my ego's, my meditation teacher has this charming phrase that he uses, a slap round the face with a wet fish, which is really unpleasant. But it's he uses this because it's quite comical, but it feels like you have been slapped around the face with a wet fish sometimes when he takes your ego down and you're like, oh, that's like, ow, wow. But yeah. Then when you look at which part of you was slapped, it's like, it's kind of funny, you know? You just end up laughing at it because you're like, why are you so insulted by that? It's nothing.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's part of everything that we're going through right now. Yeah. That opportunity to move away from the part of us that gets hurt and embarrassed and righteous.
Yeah, exactly.
It's uncomfortable, but it's worth it.
Yeah. So after that, we go 11th of April to the 15th, Sun in Gate 42, the gate of growth or increase, and the Earth in Gate 32, the gate of continuity or duration. So this 42-32 combination. So this is down sort of sacral and spleen energy coming off the root. So the 42, this growth and increase, is, I think, profoundly evolutionary. It's this. It's referring, I think, to the growth or the that comes in us when a cycle is closed off. You know, it's this endings, the closure, this really genuinely moving past something that we were involved in to make space for something new to begin. It's quite often related to ways of relating. So, you know, habitual patterns of, like, however your parents modeled how to relate to each other or to you. It's those kind of inner relational cycles. And so real growth that this is referring to means we don't need to repeat that pattern of behavior again. And this has been, my observation of this has been super interesting in the last month and a half. So just to say that, like, at one level, moving past or getting closure on relational patterns inherited through our genetics or our family systems, can take quite a while, and it may take several cycles, several passes at it to really get full closure. They might be really deeply entrenched and take a while. But also, in some situations, it can also just be a decision. It could be as simple as just deciding, I'm done. And this happened to me in a transit with a person rather than a transit with the transit with the planet. So it's interesting, I'm talking about this period, April 11th to the 15th, where the whole planet is getting a little shot of 42. But I just wanted to share this personal experience to show how it might play out. So I have a friend who has both of these gates in her natal chart, and I spent 3 days with her. And so it's only when I'm preparing for this podcast and reviewing gates 42 and 32, and I was like, that happened to me like 2 weeks ago, but why? And then I was like, straight away looked at her chart and I was like, there they are, that's what happened. I transited with her, and I just, we'd been together like a day and a half, I woke up and I was like, the second I opened my eyes, I was like, I'm getting closure on this. This has been going on too long. This is my connection to my ex-boyfriend who I've been grieving for 3 years, like really grieving, and completely unable to let go of the thread and completely unable to fully move past that relationship. And I just woke up and I was like, okay, closure today, this is happening. So I wrote the letter. I said everything to him that I wanted to say. I was sleeping in my van. She was sleeping in a house. And I went into the house and I said, would you witness me while I get closure on something, please? And so we built a fire and I lit some incense and, you know, made it very ritually. And I sat in front of the fire and I read the letter aloud and had her witness me read it aloud, because I always think it's more powerful if someone's actually watching you or being there. I cried. I think she might have cried a little bit as well. I burned the letter and I let it go. And I actually let it go. Like, it's gone. Like, that little energy that was clinging, that thread has completely, it's gone. And so there just will come a moment where it's like, I'm done. I'm done with this. Mm. And so this may come up in this week of April. You might just suddenly be like, I am over it. And it might involve an actual communication with an actual person where you set a real life boundary, or it doesn't necessarily need to be, is what I'm saying. I didn't need to contact him and tell him I was over him. He doesn't need to get involved. I tell the universe I'm over it, and
yeah,
I get myself over it. So I think this this thing about attachment patterns and whatever it is that you need to get closure on, it may come up during this week. And I told this story to a client who I work one-to-one with. She messaged me the next day or the day after and said, just had a massive closure with her daughter as the catalyst who has this gate. So I wanted to highlight this because we're talking about the transits, but like, you never know who you've walked past or spent a day or so with, and that the way that our energy works on each other in contact and in the companion charts or the composite charts is also interesting, like really interesting.
Yeah. And you know, when I hear that, well, that's one of the other things that I love about human design, but I also don't like about human design, is like the gift of human design is that we have to learn to trust that the universe is going to fill the gaps, bring the people. And as long as we're letting go of the fear, of the ego, of the conditioning, everything we need will be there. You know, even just hearing that story, which is a beautiful story, thank you for sharing. You know, I know as a person that I've tried to rush closure on so many freaking things. You know, trust the process. And this sounds great. You know, maybe this is a week that energy is going to be there for you to finally close things out. And, you know, maybe it's even an invitation to not just brush it under the carpet and make a bit of a ritual or a ceremony out of it, to be gone with it. Like, I can think of one relationship that I really freaking hope that comes up. Like, I'm hoping, yeah. Universe, I'm setting my intention, please, it's going to be that one.
I'll tell you what, though, what I also think is important is I was completely okay with living with that grief for the rest of my life. I wasn't trying to get rid of it, is the point. And yeah. I have this conversation so often with friends or clients where they're like, I want to be over it. And it's a difficult thing to get people on board with, because but for me, the only way that we can ever genuinely get closure is when we are okay with our lived experience. Because like you said, you can't force it. It will happen in its own time. And in the meantime, between that point, and for me, it's been years, if I wasn't able to just hold space for that part of me that was grieving, literally every day, I mean, almost every day I would cry about it. And it's like, most people see me and they don't know that, you know, most people don't know that about me, that I had this profound sadness about the end of this relationship. But that's part of me, you know, me and my relationship with me being my own best friend, me not trying to force me to be any other way than the way that I am. And grief is a big thing, whether it's like the death of a person or the death of a pet or the death of a relationship or the death of a job or the death of a part of your identity.
Yeah.
Like, so many, we have so many deaths in our lives.
Exactly.
And learning to hold them close and let them enrich your humility, that's actually what it does for me. Holding my grief close, I am a much more humble person and a much more compassionate and empathetic person than if I ignore my grief or don't acknowledge it. because then I become just kind of dead and profoundly arrogant because I'm like, why is everyone in such a mess? And it's like, well, if I acknowledge that I'm in a bit of a mess, then I can hold space for other people to do that for themselves.
Yeah. I think it's a, like, grief is such a unique thing. You know, I remember back to when I was doing my coaching training and, you know, I mean, I'm trained, it's called Metadynamics where I'm trained, but it's NLP. Mm-hmm. And we did all of these incredible, we have all these tools that we can literally change people's behavior in an instant. Like someone who has been profoundly terrified of spiders, like I can fix that shit in a couple of minutes. It's all good, easy. But what was really interesting, and it always stayed with me, was when we've learned about grief. There's a very specific NLP grief process that you can do. And one of the things that we, like, we weren't even allowed to learn this process until we understood the level in which we were not allowed to perform this unless we literally had an okay from the body, not just from the mind, but from the body. Because grief is the thing, and it was really interesting because I went through a school where they were all about models and structures and everything had its place and everything had its process. But this particular one, it was like, it all starts with you discovering the truth about their grief process and you being the bigger person that says, that's not a clear yes, this can't be done, you're not ready, or I'm being told that you're not ready. So I think that's something with grief as well. We all deal with it so differently and we have to trust our process. And I feel like that's a massive metaphor for where we're going, you know, like we really have to trust our own processes. You know, I had an experience with my dad where I grieved him the moment he went into a home. So there was years of grieving what I wouldn't have, what I was going to miss out on, what I didn't, you know, the conversations, the time, that the stories I hadn't heard, and fuck, I cried. And then when he did die, I didn't have the same response. When the moment I discovered or I learned that he died, I felt his relief. Mm-hmm. Like the thing that popped into my head was, oh, he's finally free. So you have to, grief is so unique, and I totally agree with you. It's also an incredible teacher of our own process, trusting our own process.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Emma. So the following week we move April 16th to 21st, Sun into Gate 3 and the Earth into Gate 50. And we also have Pluto in Gate 60 at the moment, so that is going to create the channel from 60 to 3, the channel of mutation. Gate 3 is called acceptance. And in the I Ching, it's called difficulty in the beginning. And I'm going to make this quite mundane now. You know, we can go from these extremely profound realizations to just the mundanity of Gate 3.
Welcome to being a manifesting generator. You're welcome.
So, this difficulty in the beginning, I was like, when does this show itself in my life? So there was this example of how well-oiled our lives are, this human need to logically correct processes until they're like super smooth. Depending on where you live and the way your society functions, you will have a different benchmark, I think, for efficiency versus non-efficiency. For example, if you live in Switzerland or you live in India, different benchmarks on how efficient things are. So I think we all come with our pre-programmed set of what should be difficult, what I'm expecting to be difficult, and what actually I'm expecting to be easy or expecting to be well-oiled. For example, I live in the UK. We have excellent online services for our household utilities, banking, whatever. I tried to live in southern Italy for a few years. You can't get anything done. None of it's automated. None of it's online. Everything involves a 4-day trip to somewhere where you queue for hours and then they turn you away because you've got the wrong form in paper in a different language. It's like, so my benchmark of what should be easy and what should be difficult is very different to the southern Italians, for example.
Love it.
Another example, say you're shifting from one computer to another one. and you haven't realized how much your web browser is remembering, and then you have to remember all your passwords, and it takes you literally days to get everything working the way it used to, or the same if you're shifting from one phone to another. Or you move house in your case, Emma, and all your things are not in their usual place, or they don't even have places yet, and everything is taking way more time than usual.
Yep. Are you in my head?
I am, because I understand the archetype of gate three, difficulty in the beginning. So let's just, I think this is one, like when it says acceptance, you have to accept that if you have just started something new, then it's going to be difficult in the beginning. The earth this week is in gate 15, which is the gate of values. Let's use that as an example. For like, if your new difficulty is related to gate 50, so say, for example, you've been taking on too much responsibility and overgiving in your family, because this channel is all about like the balance of nourishment and care for self and or others. You might have decided that you actually value yourself, as in you may have been overvaluing your contribution to the family, and you're saying, actually, I don't want to be responsible for the moral education of the children all by myself anymore. I would like my partner to be equally involved in the moral education of my children. And you both agree that this is what you're going to do, but it's going to be difficult in the beginning. Like, you're both learning a new way of being. It's a new habit that needs to be established, and it's going to take time and practice and frustration and all the things before it becomes second nature. So it's just worth highlighting this energy of difficulty in the beginning, because we just have to get really real about what is going to be easy and what is going to take some time. And the key to this is, A, don't be surprised that this new thing is difficult. Don't be frustrated that this new thing is difficult, because if you rush it, it's going to be worse. And if you haven't allowed enough time, if you haven't built in time to let, like if I change my phone to a new phone, I am taking 3 days off, because it's going to take me that long to move everything over and like reinstall all the apps and get everything working so that my life can be as efficient as possible. So this is part of the channel of mutation. Pluto is doing a lot of mutating back there in gate 60. We've had this discussion about all the other things that have mutated because of all the activity in the sun, Mercury, Venus and Mars, like all the things in gate 60. Mm-hmm. So many people who have been through that process of profound transformation may now find themselves in this frustrating space of, nothing works the way I want it to work.
Let's
just acknowledge that this is also an archetype in the body graph.
Yeah. And you know what? It's really interesting, because it is actually the archetype of change. It's why and success is a big word and it needs redefining, but it's why there is a smaller percentage of people who hit their potential or they succeed to their potential. And it's exactly because of this archetype, because change is really hard in the beginning. It's really freaking hard. And, you know, even having this heads up, I just have to keep turning up. You just have to keep turning up. Just keep turning up for yourself. You know, this is also a time to be, I love the gate 50 piece as well, because a large part of that new beginning, challenging in the beginning, you know, how specifically am I meant to create order here? I don't know. A lot of it is to do with that responsibility, you know, like where do I need to take responsibility and where do I need to let go? And the only other thing that I would add is like it's going to be a time that's exciting, because new beginnings are exciting, but very quickly turns into a time of compassion, where you just need to be on your own team for turning up. Like turning up counts. Like be, as I would say, I'm in the room as long as I'm in the freaking room. Like, so also an important time to be on your own team.
Mm. Yeah, really. Because it's interesting. Then the next week, the sun goes into gate 27. So the hot both at both ends of that channel.
Oh, I love that.
You get the Earth 1 week, and then you get the sun the next week in this energy of nourishment and caring. And it's called the channel of preservation, right? It's like, how can I preserve myself, my values, our family, like whatever it is, through this time, just holding everyone close and being like, okay, come on, we're going through.
Yeah, I love it. And also, like, this is the thing, like, I love how it turns up after that energy of the three, that transformation, because change is hard in the beginning and it's messy in the middle. Who is it? There's one of the mentors, I do know it's Robin Sharma. He always says that change is difficult in the beginning, messy in the middle, and awesome at the end, or something like that. So the 27 turning up just in time, like, yeah. A lot of change is just turning up and then being compassionate with yourself. Like, it's not about getting it right. It's not about knowing what to do. It's not about being a freaking hero. It's literally about showing up. And then that energy coming in of nurturing yourself that you've come this far. Just keep going. Just keep going.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Gosh, I heard the most beautiful song last night called the Just Keep Going song that this incredible musical duo in America had recorded at the beginning of the pandemic. She's got like pipes, man, like she can really sing. Wow. Maybe I'll find it and link it in the show notes, this Just Keep Going song. It was just so beautiful.
I love it.
I'll send the link to Justin.
Yep, sounds good.
So then following week, like I say, April 22nd to the 27th, we've got the sun going into gate 27, the gate of caring or nourishment, and the earth will be in the gate 28, the gate of the game player, preponderance of the great. So this made me think about giving, you know, because giving is an interesting thing to think about. Most of us, I think, were raised with this general feeling that you should be self-sacrificing. We were generally taught that it's better to give to others than to receive. You know, we've all heard that, and some of us live by it. But the Siddhic level, you know, if we're looking at the Gene Keys language of this, the Siddhic expression of this is selflessness. And at the level of selflessness, that is true. Giving is better than receiving, because if you have truly become selfless, there is no sense of self left who needs or wants anything. You would just have the body and its needs. Above and beyond the body and its needs, the sense of self that's like, I need this to feel happy, or I need this to feel emotionally stable, that's gone. And all that is left is this genuine selflessness. Like, what else would I do apart from give to other people? Mm. But let's be honest, most of us are not there yet. We have still got an egoic emotional structure that does have perceived needs. So selflessness in our society, the way it generally plays out, is this mentally driven moralistic high ground where we're trying to be a good person and we're afraid of being a bad person, or at least perceived as that, which results in us overgiving and almost demonstratively like a performance of overgiving to show other people how selfless we are and therefore what a good person we are. If you're a generator, over a lifetime of overgiving, you will end up with functional burnout. If you're not a if you're non-circle, you will probably have chronic fatigue, ME, like you'll get taken out by your body, who can't overgive to the point of exhaustion. And then even if that doesn't happen, I see a lot of people after many decades of overgiving, trying to be a good person, they give out of a sense of habit or a sense of obligation, but they're resentful. So their giving is actually carrying this energy of resentment, and mm-hmm. It's low vibe, my friends. It's like real low vibe. My observation of when the easiest way to spot that, like, am I giving selflessly because I genuinely love this person and want to do this thing for them, or am I giving out of this from this other reason, is what you're in a dialogue. Because I'm going to use cleaning the bathroom as an example, because I don't think anyone really likes that job. If you're doing it and having a little inner dialogue of your martyredness and your resentfulness, and that's the contents of your mind, you might be overgiving. But if you're doing it and maybe you've got some tunes on and you're just happily enjoying your task and doing the cleaning the bathroom just for the sake of cleaning the bathroom, you're probably not over giving and martyred.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yes, and can I just add?
Yeah, sure.
The big thing for me, like, I totally resonate, and the way I would articulate it is the moment you want something in return. So if you want something in return, then you're not being selfless. And something in return might just be being seen, validated, acknowledged.
Yes.
But exactly as you say, like if you're cleaning the bathroom because you want the bathroom clean, and this is something for me personally that I have done so much work on, you know, like because martyrdom was something that I played out extensively because I have a mother that was all about her. So, you know, it was never about me. So then I grew up and I was like, well, I'll just clean the fucking bathroom. Don't worry about me. I'll just fucking do it. And now, you know, like I am a person, I have the gate five. I love order. I'm not too much, but I love order and I love tidy. And one of my biggest lessons, like cleaning is actually like one of my lessons, gifts, whatever, like learning to do it because I want to do it. You know, like if I look at one of my sons in particular is particularly messy, learning to either accept his bedroom the way it is or clean it myself without any need for anything in return has been such a great lesson. I think that, and that's a real barometer if we're being really selfless or we're doing it because we want something in return.
Yeah, completely. And there's also like I see a tendency with open root centers and open will centers, like beware of this, because if you can always notice if you're resentful of people who are relaxing and having a nice restful time, if you're judging that, it's because you're judging yourself for resting. And I think they kind of go hand in hand, you know,
100% undefined root center over here. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So just what I want everyone to take on board is we are in choice. You are choosing to do everything that you would do. Not
100%.
Nobody listening to this podcast is under some kind of regime where they are not in full choice. So whatever it is that we're doing it because we're choosing it. And if we hate it, we have to stop choosing to do it.
100%. And if it's something that we perceive we, inverted commas, have to do, then we need to choose a different perspective. We need to choose a different attitude. We have to choose to find a better way. But, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of it, you know, again, let's look at some open centers. An open solar plexus who's afraid of conflict, who's therefore afraid to set a boundary, may well be overgiving because they're afraid to say, I don't like doing this or want to do this. This is exhausting me. But they're just afraid of having that slightly awkward conversation and they're afraid that, let's come back to the original point, I will be judged either by them or by someone else or even by myself as being a bad person if I don't do that thing. So much of this good person, bad person labeling. I can't imagine how hard it is to have kids because I was with three friends yesterday, two of whom have children, talking about the judgment of other parents. And like they were talking about breastfeeding and giving up or not giving up and how long do you breastfeed for and all of this thing. And they were like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
100%.
It's like everyone having an opinion on other people's choices.
Yeah. But I think that's part of it, you know, that we have to teach our kids to respect other people's choices. Anyway, totally interrupted. Yeah. Got you off path.
Just exactly that. Like the labels good person, bad person need to be
completely. It's bullshit. There is no such thing. There's no such thing as good, bad, right, wrong. Those binaries do not exist. It's our choice whether or not we put them on to ourselves or onto others. And that, the moment we have to be this or that, we're fucked.
There's the classic Shakespeare quote, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so, which is exactly this. There's also, I've pulled a quote out from a book called The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt that when I read this passage, it hit me so hard. So it's a person kind of in a monologue with someone who is talking about this distinction between good and bad. So I'm going to share this quote from this book in a slightly kind of actory, conversationally voice, because just to make you know that it's not my voice.
Do it.
Well, I have to say, I personally have never drawn such a sharp line between good and as bad as you. For me, that line is often false. The two are never disconnected. One cannot exist without the other. As long as I am acting out of love, I feel I am doing the best I know how. But you, wrapped up in judgment, always regretting the past, cursing yourself, blaming yourself, asking, what if, life is cruel, I wish I'd died instead of. Well, think about this. What if all of your actions and choices, good or bad, make no difference to God? What if the pattern is preset? No, hang on. This is a question worth struggling with. What if our badness and our mistakes are the very thing that set our fate and bring us around to good? What if, for some of us, we can't get there any other way?
I love it. And you know what it is? Like, just as I'm hearing you speak, it is literally good and bad is created, and in that space we create our own shadow. And if we learn nothing more or nothing else about our shadow, is that there's nothing wrong or bad about it. These things are, it's mythical, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not true. And the moment, you know, how do we heal our shadow? We bring it into the light. We stop judging it, guilting it, shaming it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a beautiful passage, and I couldn't agree more. You know, there is no such thing. And so often it is our shadow. It is the things, inverted commas, that are wrong about us. Like, that are our lessons, you know. One of the things I see over and over and over again with, you know, one-on-one clients, programs, people I work with, is the moment they wake up and realize they have been punishing themselves for their gifts. Mm. They have been punishing themselves for being in alignment because it doesn't fit into the good, bad, should do this, should do that. That is who I should be and how I should behave. So I love it. It's beautiful and it's powerful, and we need to blow up those the mm-hmm. binaries.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, it's interesting. I taught yoga in a prison that my mum volunteers at, and a couple of the guys that I was teaching this yoga class to had got really into Buddhism and spirituality in prison. Like, they'd had, you know, come from these, you know, I don't know what they'd done, but they'd come into these this environment where they had access to books that they probably never had access to. And it's like that quote from the Goldfinch: what if some people can't get to good by going via the bad?
Absolutely. You know? But look at some of the greats. Like, oh, my God, his name always leaves. Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela wouldn't have been Nelson Mandela if he'd hadn't done the wrong thing or pissed off the people who were the wrong people. And, you know, like, we're categorizing all of these different groups, and they should have done this and he should have done that and he shouldn't have blah, 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 blah. But let's just take a step back. It created a diamond. You know, it created a diamond. You know, one of the things, going back to my kids, one of the things that I absolutely will not allow is my kids, like, we've never said that is naughty, that is bad, that is good. We don't do that. And if I ever hear my kids saying it, I'm like, nope, there is no such thing as naughty. It's just a choice. No one is naughty or bad. It's a choice. And I think even, you know, one of the things with prisons as well, like, and don't even get me started on that. Like, that is no, like, that is not rehabilitation. That is just conditioning people into believing that they are worthless, you know?
Sure. And, yeah. I mean, yeah, we could go down a big rabbit hole on that.
Let's move on.
So we're nearly there. We're finishing up the month, April 28th to May the 3rd. The sun goes into gate 24. Gate of rationalizing or returning, and the earth is in gate 44, alertness or coming to meet. So this gate 24, finishing up the month, returning is the I Ching word, and it's the way that this gate returns to questions, the questions being generated by gate 61. You've got your gate 61 up there in the head going, what's going on?
But why?
And gate 24 being put under pressure to answer the question. So it keeps returning. It'll keep going back. Like, what is going on? Why is this happening? So I looked at the gene keys to explore this. The shadow state being addiction. Addiction to what? Thinking. And more importantly, an addiction to thinking that thinking can solve your problem.
Amen, thinking. Sister, we're done here. That's all we need to hear.
I'm just going to use the word thinking a lot in sentences. Thinking that if you just think about it some more, you will think yourself to a solution. That's the addiction that we're all trying to overcome. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
And what you know and I know, the unbearable states of mental anxiety when we still think that thinking is the solution, like you were saying earlier in this podcast about you and Justin, like just thinking yourself into a corner, you know, you're like, I can't, like I'm thinking round in circles here. This is,
yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, like for me, my life experience that it took a long time to teach me properly and deeply enough, but was depression and anxiety. You know, like I literally wanted to remove my brain. I wanted to stop thinking, and I was so addicted. So addicted to thinking and to solving and to fixing. And it never fixed it. It was actually the letting go, you know, it was the letting go of the thinking that was the catalyst.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to completely demonize thinking.
Thinking's awesome. Like it gets us, like it's that supercomputer that we have.
Yeah.
It's just that we can't get trapped by it.
No. I mean, my mind, you know, occasionally generates pretty amusing content.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy the content sometimes, but I have to be very, very careful how much weight or emphasis I place on that as being my happiness, actually, because although my mind is occasionally entertaining, it's not where I look for my happiness. My happiness lives in my body. And it lives in my ability to be with my whole self, regardless of what is happening. That is where my actual happiness comes from. It's in the relationship I have with all of the parts of me, not just my mind and my thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the city, I think, is silence. Pretty sure.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I hear this word again. Do you know this is a word that just is showing up in my world so much at the moment?
I feel like I need to check that information. Carrot, you tell the story while I just check that is correct.
No,
but I'm pretty
sure
that's silence.
That's all I had to say, just that silence is a big part that's playing out for me right now. And I think that that's also how, you know, one of the things that I love about thinking and one of my lessons is that I was really surprised to see that Einstein had an undefined head and Ajna. And I think that what the great lesson from that is that especially what we're learning from the panels that we're doing in HDX, like, what we're taught isn't true, you know, like the gift of the undefined head and Ajna is there. A lot of it is thinking. It's just don't attach yourself to that thinking, because the moment you understand that you're never going to have structure, it's never going to be a process, it's never going to be logical, but that simmering is actually the head and the Ajna reading the energy around you. And when you can allow that just to be, that's when the freaking amazing things drop in. That's when you're like, hey, I've never thought of it that way. So, yeah, I think the power of good thinking is actually just letting it do its own thing and waiting for something to be highlighted in your attention.
Yeah. And, I mean, same as like the truth is that in my world, the happiest I've been is when my mind is silent.
Same.
And we've spoken about this off like the podcast where we're talking about meditation and the techniques and et cetera. When I'm just absorbed in the business of existing and the mind is quiet, it's beautiful. But I just do want to acknowledge that it took my nervous system a long time to trust the silence. Yeah. Like I was basically afraid of peace and quiet for quite a long time. I don't know if it's something personally to do with my high sound determination, because it isn't actually that great for my body to be in silence when it's digesting particularly. But
no, I think this is a common thing.
Yeah.
This is a really common thing. So people are afraid of silence and stillness. They're afraid of the void, because when there's sound and thinking and noise, they know who they are. It's like, you know, like in the chaos, you know who you are, but in the silence, you don't. I've shared it a bunch of times that one of the biggest challenges for me was learning to meditate. I was so afraid to close my eyes because I didn't know what was in the void. But this is part of like human behavior. Most people are addicted to movement, sound, stress, all of those things, because they're more afraid of what they don't know than the pain of what they do.
Yeah, it's interesting the word you use there about identification, because when you said I don't know who I am, when it's silent and still, the shift in perspective there is, what if I am the silence and the stillness?
Exactly.
What if that's what I am, and I've been misidentified with the noise and the movement this whole time?
Yeah, well, it's truth, isn't it? But our egos don't like it.
I'm definitely coming around to that, yes.
Yeah.
As the more I learn to identify the silence and the stillness as my true self, the less scary it is to be there with it.
Yeah.
And the more space there is around all the rest of it, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I have this very, I consider myself one of the lucky ones. Like, as a kid, I now look back and go, because of the trauma I experienced, I was always known as a kid that lived in my imagination. You know, I played on my own. I lived on my own, but I just was in my own little world all the time. And I think that what's fascinating as an adult is I'm like, oh my God, how I would love to have that world again, where I was just present and curious and not necessarily identified with anything. You know, I think that's beautiful. But as an adult, I have not been able to, as yet, create that consistent place. But I will. I'm on the journey.
The wind is working on you, Emma.
Exactly.
So that's it for the Sun Earth activations. I'm going to talk briefly in Celestial Spotlight, which I feel needs a jingle.
Yeah, maybe we should do that. I'll get Taylor onto that.
Celestial Spotlight. Or you could just put up with my terrible singing. Last time we were talking about Neptune in 36 on the last podcast, where I walked through, you know, my experience of moving through emotional triggering in my body. So Neptune is still in 36, unsurprisingly, and Jupiter is going to join it there. And they're going to have an exact conjunction on the 12th of April in line two. And that's quite rare. I can't remember. It's something like 150 years that they have not been conjunct for. So I think I've got something right in saying that. So
can I ask, before you go any further, what does that mean? When those two come together and they're conjunct, what are we going to, I know we're going to go into the gate in a little bit, but I want you just to break it down even more simply. So when those two come together and they're conjunct, what does that create?
Well, what does it mean? That is personal and arbitrary, because we do create meaning. Just to say, each person creates their own meaning.
True.
The archetypes of Neptune are, from a traditional Western astrology perspective, the depths and the water, and the depths of water. And the water usually representing our subconscious emotional life, right? So there's that. It's a spiritual teacher in kind of Ra's language, and also in my observation of Neptune. It's often veiled and hidden. It has a long, it's more than a lifetime's worth of a transit. Like, we don't get a Neptune return, you know, so it's a couple of lifetimes kind of journey.
Wow.
Jupiter is abundance. It is a big, big planet and a big energy. It's got this bridge. I feel it's like a bridge. So it's like the outer planets and their unavoidable influence on what we're all experiencing at a planetary level. Jupiter kind of, I think, encodes into our cultures and our societies and what we're talking about. We spoke briefly before we hit record about the zeitgeist, about how I think Jupiter brings this kind of zeitgeisty energy, where it's like everyone seems to be talking about, you know, the thing that just comes up over and over and over and over again. We spoke about it briefly before we hit record. We've both just suddenly started watching Life After Death with Tyler Henrich on Netflix. This uprising of shows about mediumship, let's say, and an interest in mediumship, and this kind of understanding that, yes, there are some people with a profound gift from birth or from your early childhood, but also almost everyone has an experience of feeling like a deceased loved one has communicated with them in some way. I don't know anyone that hasn't had that experience, actually. It may just be the circles I move in, but
I concur. I think
pretty
universal. So we've got two circles. We've got two circles. I concur.
Yes. So, and this is because Jupiter's been in 22 since, let me just get the dates. So Neptune was in 22 until the 5th of March. Then the sun went in for a week. And then Jupiter took over on the 13th of March and is finishing up on the 6th of April. So that, my observation of that, Neptune handing over to the sun, handing over to Jupiter in a very quick relay, was this, for me anyway, I think 22 brings new spiritual teachings into my life in the form of a TV show or a podcast or a book or whatever. So people might recognize that new spiritual something coming into their lives. So when now we have this 36, so they've all handed over the baton into gate 36. Neptune went into 36 in early March, and now Jupiter's going to go in and join it and, like I say, make a conjunction. So we've got this zeitgeisting of the depths of gate 36. In traditional astrology, it's watery because they're both in Pisces. So you've got Neptune, which is all watery, Pisces, which is all watery, Jupiter bringing abundance. I mean, you're living through this abundance of water right now in the real world, yeah. Emma. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind, it is that kind of energy. It's like, it can manifest as water, like actual water. From a gate 36 perspective, it's an emotional depth. Mm-hmm. And so we spoke about line one, which was resistance, 36.1, and how we resist our emotional depths. Line two, which is where this conjunction is going to happen, is got the keynote of support, assistance to others. So it may be that those of us that didn't resist our emotional depths or have stopped and have started to learn to really be with ourselves in that will now be able to assist others in moving through theirs. It might also refer to these, because it's the gate of crisis, it might also be these continued crises that are happening all over the world and the assistance that we're going to be able to offer in those, in whatever ways we can. So I think, I suspect that's what 36 line two is bringing us in this conjunction. And then it's worth noting that what we've just spoken about in relation to gate 24, with the sun in gate 24, where this addiction to thinking, mm-hmm. and the gift of silence, Uranus has been in gate 24 for nearly 2 years. It's moving out on, let me check the date, it's the 28th of March. So by the time this podcast goes out, it'll probably just have moved, and it's going into gate two. So what has Uranus been doing to our thinking? Well, some unusual things, let's say, because that's the gift of Uranus, is this unusualness. And we have had some very unusual thinking on many levels over the past couple of years.
Revolutionary and out there and big and, totally.
And we are, again, according to human design, in our Uranian life cycle, as in we live for about 84 years, which is the orbit of Uranus. Mm-hmm. So it's quite, it's an important planet for us in terms of our human life trajectory.
I love Uranus. I love it.
Me too.
I feel like it's my, you know, like my freaking soul animal or something. My, what is it? Spirit animal.
Spirit planet.
Neptune and Uranus. Sign me up. Weird and spiritual. I'm in.
Mm-hmm. So it's going into gate two. So it's going to bring its unusualness and its unexpectedness and its uniqueness into gate two. It was in, its first entry into gate two was between June and October last year, because it, you know, it bounces in and out of a couple of gates as it's like retrograding in and out. It's now going to have a more extended period in gate two from now until May 2023, where it's going to be unbroken. So it's gate two. it's another, speaking of hexagrams, double hexagrams, it's another double hexagram, double trigram gate. It's pure yin. Six broken lines stacked on top of each other, double earth. It's called the receptive in the I Ching. So we're getting Uranus in basically the earth gate for 2 years. For May 2023. So it's receptive, right? It's about receiving from the earth. It's about, and that's contributing to your personal direction in life.
Yeah. And I love it. Like, I suppose depending on your perspective, like I've gone straight to the optimist perspective. Uranus in the two, in the gate of the earth, like, sign me up. We totally need a revolution around this. We totally need someone to shake it up. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that really for the two, and it always, it's so funny because every time I talk about the gate one and gate two, I'm like, oh, but we're not sure. Is it the feminine? But even for that, you know, like that feminine energy with this big impactful energy of Uranus, like that to me, like that feels good. That feels exciting. I mean, she could go, you know, sideways, but it sounds exciting.
Well, it'll probably do both, right? I mean, that's the nature of this. It's not a binary. It's not one or the other. It's both. My suspicion, I've got a couple of kind of things that I'm interested in. My relationship to the earth, the physical earth, if I think about what that looks like for me, and I sometimes like to just think about the looking at the hexagram, which is just six broken lines. So you've got like what looks like a hole down the middle. I like to think of that as like the place where you put a seed. And that's what you do in the earth, right? You make a little hole and you pop a seed in there. And particularly at this time of year here, because it's spring, I'm doing a lot of that right now, is making holes and putting seeds at the bottom of them. So I'm using this as a metaphor for what seeds we're planting in the next couple of years. And Uranus is bringing these kind of unusual seeds about how we receive from the earth. Or we don't have to do a lot, right, to get a seed. The seed contains within it the capacity to grow into something very large and very magnificent. All we need to do is make sure there are favorable conditions. So I think this seed planting it's great for us in the Northern Hemisphere because it's spring. It's a great alignment with the metaphor. But like, what did I just put down the middle of that hole is my question. And it's all about thinking, right? Everything out there, everything manifest is just a reflection of internal thinking. What I believe, the narrative going on internally is always what eventually manifests in the world. So I think that it's a very important time to be very vigilant in what we're planting seed-wise in terms of our thinking.
Oh, my God, I love it. I've just had a massive, like, pattern come together. You know, I keep saying how this word silence keeps coming. Like before we press record, I'm like, I was telling Jenny how I'm so fascinated with the story of the Buddha right now. I'm fascinated with meditation, but not just like mindfulness, like actual, you know, curious about meditation at a deeper level. Even I'm working with this coach at the moment, and this word freaking keeps coming up, silence. And the question is like, well, why haven't I created it in the past? So I love hearing this because I feel like I'm on this journey. I'm on this journey to plant that seed of real balance, like not overusing my voice, you know, like that's a big part of what I do. People have expectations and I have taken an expectation and I've turned it into an agreement that I should speak a lot. And there is this journey with going on for me. Like I am fundamentally an introvert. Most people would say, no, you're not, you're totally extroverted. Nope, I am totally introverted. And you know, gate 40 in my personality earth. And the gate 40 has been something that I've been contemplating for a number of years now, and that art of doing nothing that just fucking sings, like calls to me. So as soon as I hear that, I'm like, I'm totally happy to plant that. You know, the 40 also teaches us balance. I'm really ready to plant the seed of real balance, not what looks like balance to my mind, but real balance from my mind.
Interesting that you're having the word silence come up a lot when it's the Siddhic expression of Gate 24, which is where Uranus still is while we're recording this.
I love it. I love it. Oh my God. Human design geek.
I know, right? So I'm going to, another thing I just want to touch on, and the way I want to kind of close off, is about our relationship to the earth. So I had a conversation with a friend of mine recently, talking, she does a lot of work in women's circles and female empowerment and healing the relationship that we have to our body. And she was talking about how our relationship to the earth, the physical earth, is our relationship to our body. The two cannot be separated. We are made of earth. Everything we've ever eaten is earth. My physical structure is a result of the bits of earth I've eaten, the bits, and therefore the bits of rain and the bits of sunshine that I've eaten. Because of that, I exist in a physical form. And I was talking, we were talking about why women struggle so much with our body image. And she was saying, the more you heal your relationship with Gaia, with the earth itself, the more your relationship to your body will naturally heal. And you can't do one without the other. Like the more that you walk barefoot and swim naked and hug trees and stroke the long grass as you walk past it, smile at the sunshine, the more intimate you become in your relationship with the earth herself, the more intimate you will be able to be with your own body. And the, and that relating between the earth and the body is so extremely powerful in terms of healing. Because when you really are naked on a rock, there's nothing between you and the earth, you know? And for me, that's definitely true. The more time I spend away from houses, away from mirrors, away from social media, and just being intimate with the earth, the more the way my body looks is of no concern to me whatsoever, because I can feel it as a direct expression of the planet, as part of the planet. Like, oh, I remember, you know, I can remember the first time I swam naked in a river so clearly, because I remember thinking to myself, what the hell have I been doing my whole life? Why have I been wearing a bathing suit this whole time?
Love it.
Like, why would you put clothes on to get into water? This doesn't make any sense. It's like our clothing, I mean, it's necessary if you live in the Northern Hemisphere and it gets cold, but can really divorce us from, and because most shoes are sold in like rubber, and so you're actually never in electromagnetic contact with the earth. It's a bit different for you guys in your constant beach walking and swimming.
Yeah.
But like, for a lot of us in the Northern Hemisphere living in towns and cities, like, when are you ever barefoot? You know, it's like, so anyone wanting to like heal their relationship to the earth has to acknowledge that it's a physical relationship.
Oh my God, I love that. I've just had a real awareness as well. Like, one of the things that that I've noticed and haven't been, like, I've kind of been aware of until this moment, now I'm like, oh my God, that's what it's about, is that, and I am a person who grew up with body image issues. I mean, I think a lot of women do, but it is something that, you know, I've carried into adulthood. I'm definitely, you know, and people would often say the older I get, the more I don't care. That kind of hasn't been my story. It ebbs and flows with, I didn't know what, but one of the things that I've just realized with you speaking is that the more I swim in the ocean, the more I feel comfortable in my skin. And I've always wondered, like, you know, like, if I'm heavier or lighter, that doesn't seem to be why I feel good in a bikini. But now when you speak, what makes me feel good in a bikini is actually the swimming in the ocean. The more I swim in the ocean, the better I feel in my body. And it's only now with you saying that I realize the correlation. The more I'm in the ocean, the better I feel in my body. And it's got nothing to do with what it looks like on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm going to finish with a passage from The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. I think most people have a copy of The Prophet on their shelves. But we don't often, we go to speak to us of love, speak to us of marriage, speak to us of, you know, these, the key pieces. But there's a section called on clothes. So I'm going to finish with that.
Please.
And the weaver said, speak to us of clothes. And the prophet answered, your clothes conceal much of your beauty, yet they hide not the unbeautiful. And though you seek in garments the freedom of privacy, you may find in them a harness and a chain. Would that you could meet the sun and the wind with more of your skin and less of your raiment. For the breath of life is in the sunlight and the hand of life is in the wind. Some of you say, it is the north wind who has woven the clothes to wear. But shame was his loom, and the softening of the sinews was his thread. And when his work was done, he laughed in the forest. Forget not that modesty is for a shield against the eye of the unclean. And when the unclean shall be no more, what were modesty but a fetter and a fouling of the mind? And forget not that the earth delights to feel your bare feet and the winds long to play with your hair.
So beautiful. Oh, my God. What a gorgeous way to end. So thank you so much. This has been an awesome ride. Thank you for being you. I feel so grateful to be able to do this with you every month. Thank you to everyone listening. And I so look forward to having you all here next time. Thanks, my beautiful friend. Bye for now.
Thanks, everyone, for being here all the way to the end of the podcast. I hope you got lots of value out of it. I certainly had a lot of fun doing it. Could I please ask that you share this podcast with friends if you found it valuable? And also, bonus points, could you leave a review for me as well on Apple? It would be greatly appreciated. If at any point you would like to be on the podcast or you've got questions that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, by all means, get on my socials and DM me. Everything you need is there in the show notes. Have an awesome day. Bye for now.